passe à un artiste. Super, encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen. Han setter den. De i semifinale.
Hello and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour. We are sitting here in rainy Gothenburg, but we are delighted because this is the first episode of the EHF Euro 2020 podcast.
Whoa!
Well, here we go, Chris. We've been waiting a long time for this and we're finally here.
We are indeed, and it's the first of, I think we're going to have 12 podcasts throughout the championship, one every second day, if you can deal with that. The Uninformed Handball Hour. Maybe not an hour long every day, more like 30 minutes every second day, but it'll be a lot of podcasts coming your way.
And today, we're going to start this off with two big names.
Yeah, as we have three co-hosts. I would say the Swedes are probably the main co-hosts, seeing as we're going all the way to the final with them. So earlier on this week, I sat down with Kim Akdal-Durie and Mikael Appelgren to have a chat about their build-up to the championship, how they're feeling, their personal relationship as well. They're two very good friends. It was a nice chat, and we'll have that coming up later on.
But before we do that, why don't we look at some facts and figures of the championship itself?
Seeing as we're focusing on Sweden, we're going to do their side of the championship today. So it's going to be groups D, E, and F for this preview podcast. And starting with Group D and France. Well, they are the side looking to improve on the two bronze medals in the last 2 years, led by Nikola Karabatic still, who has played the most EHF Euro matches of all time with 60 games at the Euro.
And you know, a group with France, Norway is never going to be too far away. Norway will be the second team in this group. They've won two silver medals at two World Championships, but are yet to claim an EHF Euro medal.
And behind them, we have Portugal, who are in for the very first time since 2006. They're going to open their campaign against the French on the 10th of January, who, in fact, they beat in EHF Euro qualification at home, 33-27.
Although Bosnia-Herzegovina are set to make their debut at an EHF Euro, they have one of the oldest squads with an average age of 29 during their qualification. And this is all spearheaded by captain Nikola Prisha, who has played for over 17 clubs in his career. Incredible.
That man has been around.
Yes.
Now moving on to Group E, and that'll be Denmark, who are almost at home in Malmö, just across the road from Copenhagen. They're the reigning world champions and have reached the semi-final of the EHF Euro in 7 of the last 9.
Hungary up next, lost their last 8 EHF Euro matches, haven't won 2 matches at a championship since 2008. Incredible. They'll be looking for a big improvement this time around.
Absolutely. Also, we have Iceland and the man who is in our team of the decade in our last podcast, Gunnjon Valur Sigurdsson. He's going into his 11th straight EHF Euro, and he is the competition's all-time top scorer with 270 goals.
Whatever they're feeding him in Iceland, I want some of it. And then last in the group is Russia. Reached the semi-finals in the first 4 EHF Euros, including the win on taking gold in 1996, but haven't gone that far since.
Now on to Group F and the co-host Sweden. They are the only host nation to ever win the title in the competition's history. So 13 EHF Euros, only one home team has won it. That was back in 2002, and that was the final of their 4 Euro goals, which is a record.
Slovenia, always great to watch, but they had their coach, Veselin Vujovic, removed from his job.
Naughty boy.
At the end of November, and they've replaced him with none other than Lubomir Vranjes. But has he had enough time to stamp his style of play on the Slovenians?
Now we have Switzerland coming into the competition. It's been a long wait for them. 2006 was the last time they played at the EHF Euro. They were hosting it back then, but it will be their 4th championship.
And then we have Poland, back in the big league again after missing out in 2018. But they racked up the fewest points in qualification with only 5 to their name.
And that wraps up our facts and figures of groups D to F.
That was lovely music, wasn't it?
It was. Very good. Good choice there, music editor Brian.
So, Chris, when we look at Group D here, France, Norway, Portugal, and Bosnia-Herzegovina, I think the big question really is, can Portugal cause an upset once again? Because we've seen they have in the past.
Yeah, this group is going to be really interesting, I think. And it's one of the reasons why we're going to Trondheim. So we're going to be experiencing it firsthand. And the first game between France and Portugal is a real cracker. I mean, that's a great way to open up this group. As I said in the facts and figures, we have Portugal who beat France at home, albeit in EHF Euro qualification earlier on last year. But they definitely have a chance. You know, in these one-off games with France and Norway not looking at their very best, France looked pretty good against Denmark in the Golden League there. But, you know, in recent years, they are still a team on the rise. They're not absolute dominant France. And Norway, who have been struggling with a few injuries of their own, most importantly, Bjarte Myrhol out, their captain, their real leader at both ends of the court on the line and also in defense. Also, Kent Robin-Tunnison out for them. So they've got their own worries. Naturally, home advantage for them with, I think, about 9,000 people in the Trondheim spectrum will be a big boost for them. But Portugal have been an handball nation, which we on Handball Hour have been big fans of over the last couple of years. Absolutely. We've really enjoyed all of their successes at club handball especially, but also in international handball over the last year or two. It's great to have them in the competition. And yeah, that is the big question. Will they beat one of them? If it's going to happen, in my opinion, it will happen in the first game against France. I mean, that's where these big shocks are most likely to happen. We saw it in the Women's World Championship in December with the French team as reigning world champions losing against South Korea. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, really, it depends to see how this Portugal side, how they shape up. They're without Duarte, which is a big worry for them, but they looked pretty decent over the weekend in the Four Nations tournament in Spain, beating Russia.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think when they don't have Duarte, what are they missing from their game? What does he bring, or what will they be lacking without Duarte?
Well, he's kind of like an inspirational leader, right? He is somebody who can play at both ends of the court. I think he's a better defender than he is an attacker, but he can pop up with the goals when necessary. I think he'll be most missing in defense then. The rest of the squad, incredibly talented, like a lot of the boys playing in Porto, for example. They know each other very well. The entire squad knows each other quite well. They've got a lot of talent, particularly in the backcourt. I really like the two playmakers, Miguel Martins and Rui Silva, two very different types of players who, for Porto, can also play side by side. So you often see Miguel Martins playing on the right-hand side in the backcourt. Two very good players who can open up any defense, as we've seen in the Champions League this year. And a lot of these players must have gained so much confidence by the way that not only Porto have played in the Champions League this year, but how Sporting played last year in the Champions League, also this year to a lesser extent. Also Benfica doing well in the EHF Cup. And that victory over France at home must have been a huge psychological boost for them. So although they'll be missing that real spiritual leader and defensive leader in Duarte, I think they'll be set up pretty well for this championship.
Now, I didn't mean to jump over Bosnia-Herzegovina there at the beginning, but I think it's fair to say there'll be no pushovers come the opening match day.
Yeah, no pushovers. And for Norway, though, I think that's probably the ideal opening game to come up against them. As we said, if there's going to be any surprises, it could happen in this first game. Bosnia are here for a reason. But as you mentioned in the facts, Nikola Prica, their inspirational leader, is 39 years old. I mean, for him, I think, and for many of these players, one of the oldest squads in the championship, it's great for them to be here. But finishing in the top two, I think, is a fridge too far.
You mentioned a lot of injuries there, but one man you didn't mention was Kenta Mahé for France. He's a player, obviously, who seems to be improving each year, but he'll be a fairly big loss, I think, for the French team, especially in attack.
Yeah, in the World Championship last year, he took over in a few games. You know, he's finally been allowed to play in the backcourt. For years, we've seen him thrown out to the left wing for France. But they have a really, really decent backcourt. I mean, well, not just decent, they have a really, really good backcourt. And the big question mark with Mahé out is what they might do on the left-hand side. But they have plenty of options there. And with Melvin Richardson able to fill in the centre-back position and maybe even starting at centre-back for some of the games, it means that the players like Roman Lagarde and Nikola Karabatic can also play on the left-hand side when needed. So I think they won't miss Kenton Mahé too much when it comes to actually the quality they have in the backcourt.
Okay, then let's move on to Group E, I think.
Yeah.
Then we have Denmark, Hungary, Iceland, and Russia.
Denmark, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just actually watched that Denmark play against France in the Golden League, and I mean it was absolutely a crazy game. It was like a rewind to the World Championship in France there, with the way the crowd and the arena in the Accord Arena. It was really incredible to see how much it was sold out.
Yeah.
And then the place was going absolutely crazy, but Denmark managed to come away with the win and looked pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think close to 15,000 people, they said, came to watch that for a friendly match, which is absolutely nuts. But yeah, Denmark looked really, really good. And it was such an entertaining match to watch. Both teams, France and Denmark, rotated the bench. They used everyone, as we were saying during the game. It was like every 5 minutes or so, you're like, oh yeah, he's also in the team. And a few of the fringe players for Denmark really made a big push to be included in the 16-man squad. And I saw that Nikolaj Jakobsen said it's not going to be fun to be him for the next 24 hours as he tries to figure out who's actually going to be in the 16. Because when it comes to the wing players, depending on injuries, it's pretty much set in stone. Also the line players, the goalkeepers, and Henrik Mulgaard, who'll be the defensive specialist. But then you've got about 8 guys who are going to be contending for 6 backcourt positions. Mm. So there's going to be a bit of heartbreak just after this podcast is released and Jakobsen cuts 2 guys. Against France there, Mikael Damgaard and Jakob Holm made a big case for their inclusion. 2 guys who probably wouldn't be first choice in the squad. I think Lasse Andersen and Morten Olsen will be looking over their shoulders now.
Mm. I mean, Lauge missing is obviously a massive loss for them, but they're still in a very, very healthy position in terms of attacking options, as you said.
Yeah, with Lauge and also Magnus Landin and Lasse Svahn, all injury doubts. It's not 100% whether they'll be in or out of the squad. They're still giving it some time, so we'll see whether Lauge is in the squad. But if he's not, there's still a lot of talent there, and I think for someone like Mikael Damgaard, it could be I say a breakthrough championship for him. He's 29.
Yeah.
But a real opportunity to be in the starting squad. And we haven't even mentioned the starting team in this backcourt for Denmark, which you're looking at Mikkel Hansen, of course, who can play anywhere and took backcourt handball to another level last year at the World Championship. Also Mads Mensa-Larsen. They've also got 2 left-handers now, Nikolai Uris and Kirke Lukka. So they've got a couple of options to play in the right-back position as left-handers and not just stick 3 right-handers there.
Yeah, I think Germany will be looking on with envious eyes. With the
yes, exactly.
And we get to Germany, obviously, in the next podcast. But after Denmark, then, it's a little bit of a toss-up. We have Hungary, Iceland and Russia. And going on the friendly matches that we had, and it's a bit tricky to say who would be the strongest here, but I'd say maybe you'd be preferring maybe Hungary or Iceland to take that spot.
Yeah, I think Hungary are probably looking the favourites at the moment. We saw a bit of the Russia games over the weekend and they just did not look on form whatsoever. You know, they were losing heavily against Spain midway through the second half on Sunday. I think the score at one point was 23-11. Of course, you always have to take these matches with a pinch of salt, but Russia not looking too sharp at the moment. Who do you reckon? Are you saying between Hungary and Iceland there? We saw a fair bit of Iceland against Germany there. Iceland without Aaron Palmerson, of course, so it's a very different type of Iceland. But if you were to throw Aaron Palmerson in there, Hungary, of course, missing Matej Lekai. Who would you...
I think you answered your own question there.
Yeah? Is that it? Yeah.
No, but I'm good.
Is that the difference?
Well, I mean, yeah, we watched that Iceland-Germany game.
Mm.
And it was fairly competitive for a good portion of the match. But then Germany seemed to have too many options or just seemed to be too powerful for them. But Iceland without Parmesan is a different package to Iceland with Parmesan. Because he brings... You're talking about a minimum 6 to 8 goals with his name.
Yeah.
So it's tricky to say... What kind of Iceland we're going to see in the first day? Because he didn't play because he's seemingly a little bit sick or whatever, but I'm sure he'd be match fit by the time the tournament throws off. For me, it's a little bit of a toss-up, you know, between Hungary and Iceland, because Hungary at these tournaments, as you said in your facts and figures, they haven't won 2 matches at a championship since 2008, so they seem to suffer a little bit at these championships. So, tricky to say, but I think, I don't know, I'd fancy Iceland in a way.
Yeah, Yeah. There you go. And something about Iceland, which is a bit of an oddity. The last couple of championships, they won their first game in the last two championships before being knocked out. So they always win the first one and then lose the two games afterwards and were knocked out. But in those last two championships, in 2016, they beat Norway in the first game. In 2018, they beat Sweden in the first game. And their first game of 2020 is against Denmark. So maybe they'll complete the triple crown, and that would be quite a way to launch this group. But I think we're kind of throwing Russia to the waste pile here. I'm sure if Alex was here right now, he might defend them a bit. But Russia at these championships are always capable of pulling off a performance. They've got a lot of game changers in there. Mm. You know, Dibrov is in there. You've got Pavel Atman as well. Mm. They've got decent players all around. Skurinski as well in the backcourt from Brest. And all they need is one or two big games, and that could be enough to take them over the likes of Hungary and Iceland. But at the moment, not looking great, I'd say.
Yeah, not looking great, but it is always dangerous to read too much into these test matches because you don't know what teams are up to or what they're testing and playing. Before we move on to Group F, I think it's better than we talk about this interview that you had earlier in the week with Kim Ekdahl-Durie and Mikael Appelgren.
Yeah, exactly. So the boys from Sweden are based already in Gothenburg. They've been here since the beginning of the month. So on Friday, I went down and had a chat with Mikael Appelgren and Kim Ekdahl-Durie, two very good friends, which they spoke a fair bit about as well in the interview, and a nice revelation about how Kim started his comeback to the Swedish national team. And I think these boys are really looking forward to the championship.
Okay, let's get straight into it.
So, gentlemen, I'll start with Kim. When we met first time in person 2 years ago, it was the final evening of the final party of the European Championship in Croatia.
Yeah,
I think that was the first time we properly met, properly talked.
I think so as well.
Do you remember?
Do you remember much?
I do. But the first time that I meet you, sort of in this state of being.
Yes.
Yes.
And at that time, if you were to give, like, if you're looking back at it, on a percentage scale, what would you have figured was the chances of you playing at this championship 2 years later?
Well, I mean, in Croatia, maybe I would have given that if there was a decent possibility, I'd say, by the end of January that year. If it had been like, I don't know, half a year earlier, that'd be close to zero. But yeah, so the chances were up, okay. So to say.
Mikael, did you always know he'd be back?
No, I think I had, as Kim said, close to zero before. Mm-hmm. And after we talked about it later, it was a little bit more bigger of chance.
Even before you had, I guess you could call it going a break now, not or the first retirement, you had retired from international handball as well. I guess it was to look after your body at the time.
Yeah.
What was it that inspired you to come back to international handball as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more to look after my mind to begin with. I mean, of course, the body as well. But I was sort of keen to try it out, being a more experienced player. I think that was one of the main things that drew me back, that, well, I tried it for a few years, like in the beginning of my career, but that it'd be interesting to try it out as one of the more experienced guys on the team and trying to be one of the sort of major key players and just getting it all together. And that was exciting. And of course, that this guy sitting next to me was and that he is here as well.
You're elbowing him, nagging him every day.
I think without him, I wouldn't have been here either. So.
Oh, really?
No.
So what did you do?
I don't think I did so much as we played together for many years in Ranekalo and got to know each other also earlier in the youth national team. And I mean, we have a lot of fun together, and I think that also inspiring to not only have one that you can play good handball with, also that you are outside the field, have a good relationship. And also, I think it's really important when you are 1 month with each other, only one hotel, and only practicing and playing, that you also have something there to relax and know that you can talk to someone and also just have some good time without playing handball.
Well, that is a huge part of these championships as well. You're 3 or 4 weeks in a hotel. I mean, for you guys, you'll be here until the main round. You know each other very well. You're both experienced guys, both just turned 30 as well in the last year.
Yeah.
How would you describe each other's role in the team off the court? Maybe like in the dressing room and then on the off days as well.
Yeah, I'd say that Apple takes a lot of space, sort of. Or he's socializing more within the team than I do. I think he's got more... to him is more natural and seems to have more fun and power doing so as well. But he's like, I'd say the central figure of okay. this team, even. Yeah.
Captain Fun.
You might call him that. Captain Badger. Yes.
That's true. And what about Kim?
No, I think Kim is also like the one he talked about. He's one of the more experienced players. I think that Kim says stuff when it needs to be said. That I think is a really important thing here. Also, when you have a little time together, we also have a good communication within the team, and also. I think that Kim also takes his space and also can relate and communicate with everyone in the team just as I am. But I've also been here longer. I was at the start one of the, so to say, key players for this new team that we had in the restart. And I think we have a little bit different roles, but still I think... Kim came in a little bit later, but in this team he also really important, being the player he is, and also with the knowledge and experience and all that stuff.
And Mikael, you barely had a Christmas break, had a couple of days at home, but during the pre-tournament camp here and being based in Gothenburg, just what, an hour away from Uddevalla from home, does that make it in some way different, maybe even more comfortable or easier?
Actually, I had from the 26th of December free, not like the other guys there. But yeah, of course, it's kind of special and also kind of nice to be so close to home, and also that you know the city. I mean, you've been here, you're taking walks in the city, you know where to go, and also when you're also playing this championship at home, that it will be really motivating and exciting.
You feel like you're saying it feels a bit more comfortable. You know, I guess you'll know people as well. I mean, easier to meet up with people for a coffee, or if you have a free hour at some point. Does it feel very different already compared to other championships?
Not yet, I would say, because we had the pre-camps also in Sweden the last couple of years. So I think it will first to be a big difference when we start playing. So I think it's a little bit too early to tell, but I think it will be a really nice thing to just be able to relax outside the hotel room and go out and take a coffee. You could do anywhere, but still have when your family and friends can come visit and just get some time where you're not thinking about handball would be good for us.
Kim, you had the World Championship back in 2011 on home soil, which I guess for not so many players will have an opportunity to play two home championships. You're coming into your second one. What are your memories of that time in 2011? And is there anything in particular you remember being different or better about a home championship?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time, right? But I don't know, the most vivid memory that I have is, to me, that was my sort of international breakthrough, which, I mean, I know the importance of this or that championship. I know the importance it has had in my career. Sort of that was where it really got going in that sense. Otherwise, I mean, that we had some sort of team dynamic that was that grew throughout the championship when we managed to sort of turn around the situation after having lost the second or third game against Argentina, and the path towards the semis looked like insurmountable. But that we managed to turn this around and then move on to the semis, that was really special.
Based on that tournament 2011, and also the Swedish team the last 2 years have experienced the fickle nature of these championships with a preliminary and a main round. So 2 years ago in the Euro, you lost three games en route to the final.
Yeah.
Last year, lost just two games and you're out of the semi-finals. What do you think are the main characteristics that a team coming through these championships with so many games, some of them clearly more important than others, what are the main things you need to survive a championship like this?
I think you should have... your piece of luck, or how to say that. Yeah. You should have some luck. Yes, like we did, we lost a lot of games, but we went through because of the other guys beating each other at the right difference of goals. And I think, of course, there is a big part that we really have to play our best handball. Of course, we have to win the right games as well. But it's so tight, and it's so close. All these games, I think, there will be very, very small thing that chooses who goes to the semifinals. Mm-hmm.
And a different format again this year with 24 teams. Only two teams will go through the main round. What do you reckon of the 24 teams, the expansion of the tournament?
I don't know. To me, it really doesn't matter that much. Well, I mean, besides the fact that that will probably give you a few easier games, because otherwise I know that the Euros it tended to be harder than the World Championships, like with no easy games at all, and especially when you got this streak of game coming at you, that it's nice to have like at least one or two where you know that you're supposed to win, even though you won't be playing your best game. Mentally as well as physically, that's really important.
A team that may not have been in the competition if it were not for this expansion, or a team you're playing first, Switzerland, and led very much, I think, unlike any other team, by a guy you guys know very well, Andy Schmidt. Has he been speaking about what this means to him? I guess he's probably been sick of sitting at home every January for the last 10 years watching you guys play major championships, maybe enjoyed a few, but I'm sure he's happy to be actually in the action for once.
I think he had a really good time as well when he was not playing.
A picture that was the one that popped up in my mind as well. I think he's happy that he's not around with the Swiss team and like losing games and playing and then going home. But of course I don't know what he's thinking, but I suppose he's happy to be able to have the opportunity to play at least one championship of any sort, not at the end of his career. And yeah, I'm really looking forward playing against him. To me, it's the first time in my life, and now having played with him for a few years, and we have a good relationship as well off the court, and it's going to be good fun.
We had a lot of 7 meters. He's saying, "Yeah, we are in the European Championship." The first penalty, I would shoot like this, and the second, I would do like this. And I say, "Yes, yeah. You're just playing mind games."
And knowing it's sort of unwillingness to any physical contact on the court, that is sort of it's easy to make him suffer at least in during practice. I don't know if that applies to games, but it's gonna be fun.
The game plan is very clear then from the defensive side of things.
Suffer.
That's great. And assuming everything goes to plan in the preliminary round and in the other groups, you could have a bit of a PSG star main round with yourself, Mikkel with Denmark, you have Nico and Sander as well, and also Rana Gulluven. There's so many players of this championship in the team. What is it like in the team WhatsApp groups during the month? Do you all avoid each other, or is there a lot of teasing, a bit of trash talk?
I don't know. I think it's almost like it's dead, the groups. Yeah. We're not having that much communication. We're just in this, I would say, championship bubble.
Yeah, I can't recall any such things in any other championship that I've played either. And I mean, now in the sort of build up before the championships, it has hardly been mentioned. And I mean, I think because to all of us, it's going to be like the, I don't know, 10th time that we play a championship, or whatever, that it's not really that special.
Yeah. Now, crazily enough, in the 13 European championships, there's only been one host nation to win the title, and that was Sweden back in 2002. Uh-huh. And part of this Bengen Boys era, when something that we're doing a few videos of the last few decades, dividing up the Euro, and the Bengen Boys are a big part in the 90s and the 2000s. For you guys growing up, did they have much of a, or they must have had an influence on you guys becoming handball players? And do you remember anything in particular about that era and maybe the home championship back in 2002?
I mean, I remember the final. I remember that I went to the movies seeing sort of Lord of the Rings or Two Towers or whatever, and I recorded the game on and saw it later that night. And I've seen it again, like sort of recently, or at least like the final moments and the overtime, etc., on YouTube. And I mean, was a special finals as well. Yeah, I mean, I remember it with a thrill.
Yeah, me as well. I also watched the game, and this some things that you won't remember. I also remember my first Champions League final with the Manchester United when they won against Bayern Munich in 99, I think. So that's kind of finals that stuck in your mind.
I remember that one.
Was there any particular player then in that team that was a favorite of yours or a certain inspiration?
Cimino. I remember Stefan shooting that last shot, and you just think like, why, like, what the hell is he doing? and then remember that the Germans, they should have won, and no one really knows or understands why that last goal didn't count. But no, as for the players, no, I don't know.
Yeah, of course, for me it was the goalkeepers, Thomas Svensson and Peter Gense. I think more of Thomas Svensson because, I don't know, maybe I can relate more to him, my play style. But yeah, and I also met Thomas Svensson afterward at training camps and went with him in practice. And he's kind of a role model for me when I was younger.
Good stuff, guys. Thank you very much. And hope you stay healthy.
Thank you.
In the next week or so.
So there you have it. Poor Andy Schmidt, huh, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah, he seems to be in for a tough old time if Kim Akdal-Duria has his way in the centre of that Swedish defence. And that's their first game. And, you know, the Swiss side really are going to rely on Andy a lot. And coming up against the hosts in the first game, though, they'll fancy this as a real opportunity. Mm. You know, Sweden, of course, coming into this group with Slovenia, Poland and Switzerland are by far and away the favourites to go through, and many people's eyes are favourites to go to the semi-final, at least, you know, being at home in Gothenburg for the preliminary round and then for the main round in Malmö. But Switzerland, in their first championship in a long while, do you think there's anyone besides Andy Schmidt that'll actually help their push? Over the weekend in the Yellow Cup, where they beat the Netherlands, where they beat Tunisia and Ukraine, they were kind of protecting Andy Schmidt a bit. Mm. No, he didn't play too much. In fact, against Tunisia in the second game, he didn't play at all. So he's really been wrapped up in cotton wool. So quite interesting, and maybe a good sign that the other players are stepping up there. You know, you've got people like Nicola Portner, for example, in goal for them.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think it's clever on their behalf to wrap him up a little bit before a tournament like this, because he's going to have a lot of attention on him. And yeah, he is carrying the hopes of a nation, really, as it were. It's going to be a big occasion for them, and they will need people to step up, because I think the impression on the outside is that it's Andy Schmidt and then everybody else in the team, and they're going to need a lot of names to step up and really deliver, because they're not going to win it or win any matches or surprise anyone just with Andy Schmidt alone. But yeah, other big news then will be Slovenia and Ljubomir Vranjes. I mean, but when this news was announced, I think a lot of people, I mean, this was my thinking anyway, was if you could pick a national team that was more suited to Ljubomir Vranjes, you'd probably pick Slovenia, wouldn't you?
Yeah, full of backcourt players who are not very tall.
Yeah.
A lot of playmakers in there, play with a lot of speed, a lot of creativity. And a team that, yeah, they've, I guess, been knocking on the door for a while. Mm-hmm. Now, they got that bronze medal at the World Championship in 2017. But at the Euros in the last few years, they just haven't been producing. Mm. You know, they were unlucky to drop some points 2 years ago, where maybe they would have felt they could have got victories. That Germany game in particular, which was one of the biggest talking points of that championship. Rani is bringing his new boys to his old hometown, Gothenburg, as well. That'll be a nice homecoming for him. He loved the challenge of trying to overthrow his own nation. And like, we saw their squad being announced on Sunday as well, and they've got quite a team. Mm. I mean, in every position, you've got really, really talented players. Like in the centre back position, as we said, is probably their strongest. You've got Dejan Bombac in there, and Mihai Zarabets. And then you've got their only big shooter then, Bort Maćkowczyk at left back, who's also a very good defender. And then you've got about 17 left-handers in there as well. So many choices in that team. You've got Vidkov Ticinic in there, who, as we saw, has been going since, 2004?
Incredible.
And he was in the All-Star team in 2004, and he's still here, 2020. That's incredible. Also the likes of Blazjans in there as well. A really interesting team. I think... Probably goalkeeping might be their only worry in there. These they're two goalkeepers who don't always perform at their best, but at least when it comes to the attacking play, Lubo, even though he may have only had a short amount of time with them, I'm pretty sure they're going to be on the same wavelength, because I think they have a very similar passion for what they like in handball and how they want to play. So, as you said, a team very suited to them. And I would put them as second favourites in this group, ahead of Switzerland and Poland.
Poland, another one now that since 2016, and they were the host of the HF Euro, I think things really haven't kind of gone their way in terms of the stream of talent coming into the Polish national team. And they've really struggled since then, of course, missing 2018. And now they are back, but then, as you mentioned in the intro there, that was me, sorry. I'm forgetting who's saying what now, Chris. As I mentioned in the intro there, they qualified with only 5 points. So they've really struggled, and I think we've seen from some friendly matches as well that they have struggled against second-rate opposition. They played against the Spanish B team, and they lost against the Spanish B team, which is pretty poor.
Yeah, and that was in Poland as well. Mm. That's a big worry for them. They probably will fancy their chances against a team like Switzerland, regardless of how strong Switzerland may seem at the moment. Poland will always go into these games with a bit of confidence, I think. At the same time, they'll have this "I never say die" attitude. They know they're not coming into it as the same team as they were 4 years ago. But I really find it difficult to see them in the top two.
Okay, Chris O'Reilly, I think we'll leave it at that for today. As we said at the top of the podcast, these episodes are going to be a little bit shorter than normal, but more often.
Exactly, about 30 minutes every time, every second day. And we'll be back with you on Wednesday with our second preview podcast before the fun begins for real on Thursday.
So, as they say in Sweden,
hejdå!